भगवते वासुदेवाय
This is Canto 4, Chapter 27, Text 28. The chapter is entitled Attack by Chandavega on the City of Purunjam.
Tvam abhadram asammatam Maya nirupitastubhyam Patiratma samadhina Nabinandati lokoyam.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The king of the Yavanas replied, After much consideration, I have arrived at a husband for you. Actually, as far as everyone is concerned, you are inauspicious and mischievous. Since no one likes you, how can anyone accept you as his wife? How complimentary that was, huh? No one likes you. And Prabhupada's commentary reads as follows. After much consideration, the king of the Yavanas decided to make the best use of a bad bargain. Kalakanya was a bad bargain, and no one liked her. But everything can be used for the service of the Lord. Thus, the king of the Yavanas tried to utilize her for some purpose. The purpose has already been explained. That is, Kalakanya as Jara, the invalidity of old age, can be used to arouse a sense of fear in people so that they will prepare for the next life by engaging in Krishna consciousness. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. So I'd like to thank all the devotees for being here this morning to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. You are withstanding the cold to come in here so that your heart heats up with the fire of Krishna consciousness. I told Panchagoda to pay the heating bill so that we wouldn't go through this next time. And he said he would speak to Krishna Balaram about this. So I want to thank all the devotees. I hope you will bless me that I may say something here this morning to purify my heart and also possibly to inspire you in your Krishna consciousness. So we are on this chapter, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Purunjan, which is the allegory told to King Prachini Maharsha by Narad Muni, so that we are to learn what is the purpose of the human form of life. And here we're on the section where Kala Kanya is desperately seeking a husband, and first she approached Narad Muni, but Narad Muni, of course, being totally transcendental and a Naishtika Brahmachari, he refused her request. He thanked her, but refused her. And then she went on to the king of the Yavanas and asked him. So he's thinking now how to use her, because Kalakanya is the daughter of time, and she's also described as being the invalidity that happens due to the onset of old age. I don't know about you all, but I am now in the youth of my old age, at the ripe age of 63, and I am certainly relating to this, what the invalidity of old age, how it actually serves as an impetus for my Krishna consciousness. And we could see here, Prabhupada makes use of this term, the best use of a bad bargain. So Kalakanya is described as a bad bargain. No one wants her. The invalidity of old age. Who would embrace that? So certainly she is not in a good position here. But King Yavana, as most kings or kshatriyas or managers do, right, Punch? They always try to make the best use of a bad bargain. So here he's thinking how I can use Kalakanya as a impetus to bring on the onslaught of death and old age and, you know, all the miseries that human society is to experience. We understand from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that there are four motivations to serve the Lord. So Kalakanya is used to inspire fear, the invalidity of old age, disease, the promise of death, can be inspirational. We were talking about that this morning, Panch and I. How many years do we have at 63? 10 years? 15 years? If we're truly blessed or maybe cursed, 20 years? How many years do we have to serve Krishna? So this invalidity of old age can serve as an inspiration. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's four inspirations in terms of impetuses to serve the Lord. The first one, he says, is fear. So here we can understand, if we have nothing together, we can at least fear the fact that we're going to grow old, and that we're, by the influence of old, there will be some invalidity there. So that means that can serve as an impetus for us in thinking, now I have some ability. My mind is clear. Well, at least for some of us, our mind is clear. Our body, we're able still to go on parikram. We're able to get up in the morning and come see the deities. We have some energy left. In the case of most of you, you have youthful energy. Even though they say youth is wasted on the young, you have youthful energy. But you can use that energy in Krishna's service. But minimally, fear can serve as an impetus for our spirituality. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the second impetus can be happiness. And sometimes we have the revelation. And most of you who have come to Krishna consciousness probably at some point had the revelation that I want to be happy. And what I'm doing right now is not bringing me happiness. But it's the more I become entangled, the more distress I experience. So it's like the insect that gets caught. Prabhupada uses this analogy, the insect that gets caught in a spider web. The more that insect struggles, the nature of the spider web is that the more the insect becomes entangled. So the insect's thinking, I struggle, I'll get free from this entanglement. But what happens is because of the nature of the spider web, the more it struggles, the more it gets wrapped up in that spider web and ultimately meets its demise at the jaws of the spider. So in this way, we have to understand that. Why did Krishna speak in Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna surrenders to Krishna, when Arjuna is going through the tribulations that he's going through, the lamentation that he's going through? Some acharyas describe the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita as the yoga of lamentation. So it's his lamentation that is bringing him to a point of recognition that he needs Krishna, not only as his friend, but as his instructor. So after his lamentation, seeing his predicament, his dilemma, experiencing the distress that he's experiencing, he turns to Krishna. And what is the first thing that Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter? He gives something like 30 or 33 verses describing how you are not your body. How that entanglement with the body is the cause of suffering. Naratam Das Thakur says, Satsanga chadi koina ashate bilashate korene lagila ye karma bandha bhangsa. As long as one is entangled in fruitive activities, he is bound up in the bodily concept of life and takes birth. So this bound up or this entanglement, the same thing with the analogy of the fly, this entanglement comes by acting according to our own desires, our desires for sense gratification, our desires to increase our what we have, our possessions, to try to interact, to set up an environment or a situation which causes greater and greater enjoyment due to contact with the sense objects. We increase the amount of sense objects that we have, the amount of meditation on the sense objects. In Madhurya Kandambini, it's described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that the cloud bank of illusion is caused by anarthas. And he breaks it down even further. He said that there are four types of anarthas. Tattva vibrama, which means spiritual illusion. We're not clear on who we are. We're unclear about the position of the soul. We're unclear about the position of the Supreme Lord. We're just unclear. We're an illusion in this way. So that spiritual illusion, tattva vibrama, is one of the components of the cloud bank of illusion that's there. So spiritual illusion. Then he says asat trishna. Asat trishna means desire for sense enjoyment. We desire for greater interaction with the sense objects for enjoyment. We desire for increased sense enjoyment by elevation to the heavenly planets. That's why karmakanda is so attractive. We perform sacrifices to please the demigods so that we can go to the planets of the demigods and thus enjoy a greater sense of happiness through sensory interaction. Then, asat trishna, then he says, mystic yoga. That we can master the mystic cities, anima siddhi, lagima siddhi, mahima siddhi, prapti siddhi, prakamya siddhi, Ishita city, Vashita city, Kamavayashita city, the eight different mystic cities, the manipulation of the material energy. So that we're thinking that we'll get greater happiness that way by the ability to manipulate the material energy. We see that's really science, is it not? Science means to understand the material energy, to better manipulate the material energy. What? For what? To create an environment that is conducive for greater degrees of sense gratification. So mystic yoga. So this is one of the asat trishnas, one of the desires for material enjoyment. There's a story. This one young man here in India, his father was a humble man. He was a boatman. So for a few paisa, now you go, it's more like rupees. Now you go, it's, I think we went on a boat ride in the Ganges, it was like 1,000 rupees or something like that. Something crazy, 600 rupees. But in this day and age that I'm speaking about, the boatman just charged a few paisa to row someone across the river and back. So, but his son, as sons and daughters often do, we want to do things bigger and better than our parents. So the son says, Father, I do not want to be a boatman. I want to go to the Himalayas, and I want to become a mystic yogi. So his father said, oh, really? He said, yes. So the father gave his blessings, and the son ventured off to the Himalayas. Fast forward 20 years, the boatman is still rowing the boat for a few paisa a day, making his humble living in that way. And off in the distance along the bank of the Ganges, he sees this very thin, long-haired, bearded person walking towards him. And he's in the distance, so he can't make it. He's old now, so he can't see very clear. And he sees this person walking toward him, walking toward him, walking toward him. Finally, the person gets very close to him. And he raises his arms and he says, Father, it is me, it is your son. Do you not recognize me? I am coming back from the Himalayas. I have practiced austerities and penances in caves. I have dunked myself in cold water. I sat in the midst of Panch Agni and performed the Panch Agni Jagna, the five fires. I've performed all these austerities and I've perfected the mystic city of Lagima. And the father said, oh? And he said, yes, just watch. So the boy begins to walk on water. So he walks on the river, walks on the water, turns around, he walks back. See what I have done? The father looks at him and says, 20 years? For a few paisa, I could have rowed you across the river. So mystic city is actually Jai Sisigoda Nitai. So this manipulation of the material, this is one of the asatrishnas, the desire to enjoy sense gratification, desire for the heavenly planets, desire for mystic cities, like that. Another one is asatrishna, ridaya dorbalam. Ridaya dorbalam means weakness of heart. Sometimes we see we have this weakness of heart. It haunts us. It permeates our thoughts and our consciousness. It's envy. It's pride. It's fault finding. It's all of these things which erode the pillars of strength of our Krishna consciousness. What's the pillar of strength of our Krishna consciousness? Well, there are many. Of course, hearing and chanting, in the association of Vaishnavas, all of these things are pillars of strength. But what is one pillar of strength which helps us is appreciation. Appreciation of Vaishnavas. Appreciation of Guru and what Guru has given us. Appreciation of all of these things. This is a pillar of strength in terms of our devotional service. So weakness of heart, if we succumb to weakness of heart, that anartha is so strong and so overwhelming, and it becomes such a part of our vocabulary, in terms of, it becomes a part of our language, to be envious by nature, and to express our envy, to be fault-finding, to critique, to blaspheme, to have all of these different tendencies, and we allow them to predominate. So this is a weakness of heart. This is one of the anarthas. This is what keeps us bound up in the material world and is the cause of our suffering and our distress. And it perpetuates the illusion. So then there is the last one, which is aparad. This is the fourth category of anartha, which causes the cloud bank of illusion that we're under, which causes us to continue to think that we're our body and to try to exploit our body. So aparad, we're very familiar with this. Aparad means nam aparad. Aparad means seva aparad. Aparad means Vaishnava aparad. And aparad means jiva aparad. So these four different aspects of aparad, we have to be very, very careful. So, nam aparad, we know very clearly the 10 offenses to the chanting of the holy name, and which is the primary offense which cultivates all the other 10? Who knows? Inattentiveness while chanting. That promotes all the other 10 offenses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, inattentiveness means what? Distraction, apathy, and laziness in terms of our approach of the holy name. So distraction, apathy means indifference. We're not determined. We don't drive ourselves to focus. The alambana. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he talks about the alambana, the focus of our meditation. He gives 7 different types of focuses of meditation that you can do. The first one that he himself practiced was Ishwara Pranidhan. That means focus on the Lord within the heart. For us, Srila Prabhupada has given us, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, the focus of the holy name. So if we allow ourselves to become distracted, if we allow ourselves to become apathetic, if we allow ourselves to become lazy in approach to the holy name, then this will ruin everything. This will weaken us, weaken our resolve to become Krishna conscious and to actually apply ourselves in such a way that we rise above just the bhajana kriya stage or the practice stage of devotional service from anishtita bhajana kriya to Nishta Bhajana Kriya. But in order to do that, we have to get onto the platform of Anartha Nibritti, where we are focused in on clearing the heart of these anarthas. Because we can see, just in those four categories, and how he breaks, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur breaks down those categories, we can see how all-pervasive it is, and how it will cause us to perpetuate the illusion, not to clear the illusion, not to become free from illusion. And when we're under that illusion, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Tika in the Manashiksha, he says that there are aspects of pride that are there. In pride, our error lies, says Alexander Pope. So the pride that's there, he said that there is this ignorance. Prabhupada talks about the ignorance in the Bhagavatam is tamisra, anger or envy of the Lord's position, anda tamisra, death is the ultimate end, tamas, no knowledge of the soul, moha, the bodily concept of life, and madha moha, mad after sense gratification. So as Narottam Das Thakur has sung, satsanga chada koinu sate, as long as one is entangled, as long as we remain entangled in fruitive activities, we are bound up, and the end result of that being bound up in the bodily concept of life is we take birth and we have to undergo the repeated struggles of birth, old age, death, and disease. So this is our problem. And this is the problem that Puranjana is being presented herein in this particular chapter. You are so attached to everything that is there. Now, it is not that we do not, as for instance, grihasthas, it's not that we are so detached from our wife and our children that we ignore them. That's not detachment. That's called irresponsibility. So let us not mistake detachment and irresponsibility. It is part of our ashrama, just like it is part of the brahmachari ashrama, to be very strict, to live a very simple life. Right? This is part, the intrinsic qualities of the brahmachari ashram. Tapasa brahmacharjina samena cha damena cha. And Prabhupada talks about that, you know, becoming free from sex and the influence of sex, the seven subtle aspects of sex, which lead to the gross aspect of sex life, of sexual intercourse. That's part of the ashrama. And one has to observe that in all three ashrams. Brahmachari, sannyas, vanaprast. But when we are part of our responsibility as grihastha, because I see a lot of white dhotis in the audience, and a lot of women, so part of our responsibility to our guru, to our spiritual practice, is that we are responsible. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he says there's five ways to cultivate bhakti, our bhakti. Through the use of our body, we use everything, our body, everything in the service of the Lord. Through the use of our mind is thinking of the Lord. Our mind is thinking of our seva. Through the use of matter, everything that we have, everything that seems to be material, the table, the book, the chair, everything can be used in Krishna's service. And it becomes transformative. Just like cooking is not bhakti. But when you cook for the Lord, it's bhakti. If someone is cooking somewhere in their kitchen, and they're tasting the soup, and they're thinking how good this is, that's not bhakti. What is bhakti? Cooking for the pleasure of the Lord. And that act is transformed into bhakti. So many actions. Driving a car is not bhakti. You know, I have my nice new Lexus and I'm driving around. Is this bhakti? No, but you get in that car. It's like yesterday, we went to Yavat and Tirukadamba. So in order to go there, we got in a car. So all the way we're thinking of Srimati Radharani, Tirukadamba, where Krishna and Radha met, and all the wonderful things that we're thinking about. So that matter, that car, that automobile, is being used in Krishna's service. So that's the way we have to engage. Being responsible means cultivating bhakti, the use of matter, use of your mind, use of your body, use of the soul. I thought that was a very intriguing observation that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that we use our soul in bhakti. And what does he mean by that? He said that the soul has natural qualities. What are those natural qualities? Being friendly, being kind, being merciful, being compassionate. So we're not just interested in mundane friendship, but we're interested in friendship which inspires our Krishna consciousness. It's like I've been friends with Panchatattva and Shamakrishi and Panchagoda for 35 years or more. And our friendship is based on what? That I'm from New Jersey and he's from Michigan? No. It's based on the fact that we've come together. In the 11th chapter, 11th canto, 3rd chapter, 30th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna gives us an insight. How do we become friends? We become friends by coming together and performing kirtan, hearing and chanting together. And that's how friendships form. Look at the diversity sitting in this room. We have people from, how many people from Russia? Raise your hand. How many people, are you from Russia over there? Raise your hands. There you go. How many from the Ukraine? How many from Croatia? Ah, I gotcha. How many from Czechoslovakia or Italy or Hungary or, gotcha, from India? Anybody from India here? How many from America? How many from any other part of Europe or South America? See? What a diversity that we're all sitting together. And why are we sitting together? Because our friendship, our bond, has come through Guru, has come through Prabhupada, has come through the mercy of the Acharyas, has come through the process of Krishna consciousness, and the summit of that process is that we come together and we hear and chant together. We come together in kirtan. And that forms bonds and friendships which are unbreakable. And that is how this Krishna consciousness movement becomes so strong and so pervasive. Because if we form friendships based on that, based on the common denominator of kirtan, our Krishna consciousness, then we begin to transcend all of our differences and all the diversities, man, woman, child, Indian, European, American, South American, African. Only that way do we chant. That is the real United Nations. That is the real United Nations. There's one nice devotee, Uttama Shloka, I think he's from Russia. He's very much into the United Nations, but not the one in New York. The United Nations that is based on kirtan. And that way, because we know, we have the experience, that if we base our friendship on the United Nations that Srila Prabhupada has built, the house by which everyone can live in, if we base ourselves on that factor, then we will become friends, true friends. And that friendship, that's friendship of the soul. That kindness, that is kindness of the soul. That mercy, that is mercy which is emanating from the soul. That compassion, it is not just for bodily compassion, but it is compassion which is born of love of Krishna. And therefore, from that love of Krishna, premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santoksa daiva rideyesho valokayanti, our eyes are smeared with the salve of love, and we see with eyes of compassion, with eyes of kindness. And that, what is that compassion? It's not compassion only for bodily concern, but it is a compassion for the soul. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if you think that devotional service does not have kindness and compassion and mercy, etc., you are not practicing bhakti. You're only practicing the shadow of bhakti. Bhakti includes all of these things. From the process of bhakti, these things naturally begin to evolve because they are part of our very core of our existence as soul. Kindness, friendship, mercy, compassion. So the cultivation of bhakti through the soul means that we are kind to each other. We are friendly to each other. We are merciful to each other. We are compassionate to each other. And if we are that to each other, we will extend that beyond our little core group here to the world. In Russia, in the Ukraine, in Europe, in America, in South America, in India, in Africa, all around the world. And we see by the example of Srila Prabhupada, one personality who came here filled with kindness, born of pure love of Krishna, filled with compassion, born of pure love of Krishna, filled with mercy, born of pure love of Krishna. He was able to transform the world. He was able to touch the hearts that were steel-trapped, locked up, bound by fruitive activities, entangled beyond belief, beyond control, beyond recognition. We are not even human when we are bound up in such a way. So beyond even recognition that this is a spirit soul, Srila Prabhupada was able to see with those eyes smeared with pure love of God. He was able to see and he was able to touch the hearts and transform the hearts. So the final way to cultivate bhakti, we have mind, matter, body, soul. The fifth way is through society. We are social animals by nature. We need to integrate ourselves in society, which gets back to my original point about a grihastha being detached from family responsibilities does not mean true detachment. It means irresponsibility. But be responsible as a grihastha means that we practice bhakti through the medium of bhakti, cultivation of bhakti through society, which means festivals, which means family. It means we have our core group of family where we're raising our children, teaching our children arati, bringing our children to the temple, giving our children good association with advanced devotees, speaking each other, husband and wife, speaking each other about Krishna. In fact, in Bhakti Lok, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about in Prajalpa, he says there's two categories. There's Prajalpa for a sannyas, a renounced order, and there's Prajalpa for a grihastha. The renounced have Prajalpa standard, and grihastha has Prajalpa standard. For a sannyasi to speak gramya katha or village talk, it's not part, that's Prajalpa. But for a grihastha to interact with family members, to be kind to family members, etc., that's not Prajalpa. That's necessary in order to function on a day-to-day basis. So the cultivation of bhakti through society, this is what we're about. This is our Krishna consciousness movement. We are training, we are becoming Krishna conscious, we are bringing that into our home, we are influencing our family to become Krishna conscious, and in this way, that cultivation of bhakti through society can become very widespread. Why do you think Srila Prabhupada was so adamant about Rath Yatra? How many of you have been to Rath Yatra in any part of the world? There we go. So you get from Rath Yatra, of course it's glorifying Lord Jagannath. Of course it's recognizing the reunion of Srimati Radharani and Lord Jagannath. Of course it's all of those internal esoteric things. But it is also a joyous festival by which one can cultivate bhakti. Your family can have a good time. You can bring your friends to have a good time. People, you should go if you ever have an opportunity. I'm from New York. If you ever have an opportunity to go to New York Rath Yatra, which is usually the first weekend of June, you should go. Haribo, Fifth Avenue. Srila Prabhupada said, the most important street and the most important city in the world. Forgive me for my bias, but that's what Prabhupada said. But if you go there in the New York Rath Yatra, You see that the whole, well, at least the part of the city that's touched by Rath Yatra becomes a festival. People are walking on the street. There's so much in anxiety. There's so much distress. It costs so much to live in New York City. How am I going to pay my rent? My rent is $4,000 a month for a two-bedroom apartment, which is about the size of this table. And they're in so much anxiety about that. And then all of a sudden, Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath. The devotees are, here we, 1,500, 2,000 devotees, smiles on their face, dancing and chanting down Fifth Avenue, no less. And people look, they stop, they get caught up, and they experience that joy. Even if it's for that moment, that passing or that fleeting moment, the joy. They never forget that. I remember meeting people years afterwards. Oh, you the guys with the colorful wagons that you pulled down Fifth Avenue. Yeah, I remember you. Prabhupada said that we should bring out appreciation in people. If appreciation, then we can also engage their intellect in Krishna's service. But first, if they're appreciative, I remember once we were on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, Riverside Park in New York, and Prabhupada was walking, and there was a businessman walking, you know, past us, coming at us, and Srila Prabhupada said, "Good morning." And the businessman said, "Oh, good morning, sir." And he kept on going. One of the sannyasis said, "Srila Prabhupada, why didn't you say Hare Krishna to him?" He said, "Oh, but he appreciates us now. So he will always remember that." So from appreciation, someone may want to take that step further. I like you guys. How can I help you? And maybe I can use my talents. Maybe I have an MBA and I can help you manage your temple. Or maybe I'm too intellectual and I can't do anything but chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes there's too much intellect there. Panchagota says, "We don't have that problem here. We have humble, simple devotees, enthusiastic to overcome any obstacle that is in their path." But you engage your intellect in Krishna's service. You engage your wealth in Krishna's service. And ultimately, you engage everything in serving Krishna. So, but we have to begin at the beginning, and appreciation is the beginning. So if Prabhupada understood that. One time Prabhupada was entering a building. There was a lady in front of, just in front of him. Prabhupada told one of the sannyasis, "Open the door for her." So one of the sannyasis opened the door for the lady. The lady went through. "Well, thank you very much. Thank you." Appreciation. I cannot emphasize enough the quality of appreciation. It's described that when a Vaishnav sees another Vaishnav, Haribo, we should immediately feel joy in our heart. And if we don't, then we should question, why am I not feeling joy in my heart? If we have appreciation for that Vaishnava, if we cultivate the good in others, seeing the good in others, oh, what a world this is, right? Instead of cultivating all the negativity that's there, oh, that person is like this, or that person is like that. Does anyone become joyous? Does anyone become blissful in criticizing others? But just think, when we extend ourselves just a little bit in appreciating. Imagine, I think about myself sometimes, probably a lot, maybe too much. But one of the things I think about is, where would I be had it not been for Srila Prabhupada? Where would I be if Vishnu John Swami had not invited me to join the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party? Where would I be? What would I be doing right now? Would I even be alive? And if I was alive, would I even be worthy of being alive? So where would I be? So that fosters in my heart appreciation for the fact that Srila Prabhupada performed incredible austerities to come to New York and to give Krishna consciousness. And if we think about that in each and every one of us, where would they be? Had it not been for Srila Prabhupada, had it not been for Srila Prabhupada's disciples performing incredible austerities, going to Russia, going to the Eastern Bloc countries, coming to India. And let me confide in you. For a Westerner in the early 70s to come to India, it was an austerity for us. It was really an austerity. I remember the first time I came to Vrindavan, we had to stay at the Fogel Ashram. You know, in a little room, fighting off the mosquitoes. It was March, getting bit by mosquitoes, going to Mayapur. If there is a mosquito in the room, it will find me. Any biting bug will find me. Coming to India, and there's so many biting bugs. They all found me. It was incredible austerity in the beginning to come here. Now you have MVT, you have Bhakti Dham, you have the guest house. You have so many nice places to stay. But in the beginning, you know, it was our chadar and the hard floor and haribo and prasadam and dysentery and so many things. And haribo. So it was an austerity. But we were willing to perform austerities on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because we appreciated the austerity that he performed for us. We appreciated the austerity of Prabhupada's disciples coming to India, going to Russia, going to the Eastern Bloc countries, going to England, going South America, going to the Caribbean, going to Africa, going all over. We appreciate that. And we see now, when I sit in the kirtan, and I sit with my god nephew's child, Sachi, who's Sachi Nandan's son, Sachi Sutta, and he's sitting here, 19 years old, living in Vrindavan, totally into kirtan. You don't know how much appreciation that brings us to see young people. They could be out in nightclubs, they could be out smoking dope, they could be out doing so many things, they're sitting in kirtan. So much appreciation is there for these young people who are tasting the nectar, the unlimited nectar that's within the holy name. So we are a society of hope, we are a society of appreciation. Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Instruction, in the six items for cultivating love and loving relationships, in that purport, he said this ISKCON society is a society for cultivating these six loving exchanges. So we are a society of love, we are a society of appreciation, we are a society of hope. And if we keep that hopeful, appreciative, loving mindset in our interactions, then everything will be successful. My wife and I had the good fortune of being able to take darshan of the original document, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's last will and testament, which was handwritten prior to his winding up his lila here in the material world. Written, handwritten, the different points. And one of the points that he makes is he says, you should all cooperate. You should all cooperate. So this cooperation, cooperate means to interact, to operate, together, with unity, with dignity, with appreciation. And then nothing can stop us from going all around the world and giving the Bhakti Lata Bij to anyone, any heart, any garden that is receptive to this. Time to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I have time for one question, 9 o'clock. One question, maybe, or comment. Any of my god brothers? Okay, you take precedence. You are temple president G.
Can not had the personal association, they might see probably by more of a statue picture.
Mm.
So how do we get the same version?
Yeah, Panchagoda's comment, we've been fortunate enough to have the association of Srila Prabhupada, and by virtue of that association, we were able to feel the sense of urgency and you know, take the Krishna consciousness seriously. And, now we're removed one, two, sometimes three generations from Srila Prabhupada. And we hear about Prabhupada, we see Srila Prabhupada's murti, but yet how are we, meaning those of you that didn't have the personal association, how are you to have that sense of urgency? Well, Srila Prabhupada very clearly said, Bapu and Vani. So, the books of Srila Prabhupada should be studied with great enthusiasm and all seriousness. We should study Srila Prabhupada's books. He's put everything in there. He's put heart and soul into those books. Secondly, you associate with devotees who have had the Vapu and may, in one small way or another, personify some of the qualities of Srila Prabhupada. And you see those qualities and you take inspiration, right? Shraddha is not an intellectual conception. Shraddha is mercy. Shraddha comes to you by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Faith. So we have faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada, the commentaries, the purports of Srila Prabhupada, and we see. This does not mean that we're blind followers. In the fourth chapter, 34th verse of Bhagavad Gita, in the purport of that verse, that Tadvidhi Pradipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya verse, Prabhupada says, blind following and absurd inquiry are herein condemned. So it's not that, it's Haribo, and we don't understand the philosophy. We don't study, we don't see what are the qualifications, the true qualifications of a Vaishnava, the qualifications of Guru, the qualifications of so many different things, how to practice Krishna consciousness properly. We study all that by precept, by study, and by example. We study example of those devotees who are living a Krishna conscious life. And in that way, they serve as the conduit of mercy and inspiration that's coming from Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada served as the conduit of mercy and inspiration coming from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who served as a conduit from the mercy emanating from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who served as a conduit of mercy from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You get the picture. That's evam parampara praptam imam rajar shayo vidhu. That means that conduit of mercy is coming to us via parampara, and we have the blessing of association through Vani. So Srila Prabhupada can be there with you. Just like Krishna can be black granite or stone or marble, or Krishna can be the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing the flute on the altar with Srimati Radharani, or sporting through Raman Reti with his brother Balaram. It's our choice. Black and white marble, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his eternal consort and his brother. It's our choice. What we want. You make the choice. So we have the conduit. Srila Prabhupada is very much alive. One who thinks that the Vaishnava departs, no, that's faulty logic. Jai. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. I wish I could, but the time has run out. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.